This is WGTD. You're listening to Education Matters, the only weekly broadcast in southeastern Wisconsin devoted exclusively to a discussion of local educational issues. Education Matters is co-hosted by Mike Valkovsky, a former KUSD school board member, Sammy Rangel, the life technician and executive director of Life After Hate, Steve Brown, a retired professor of educational leadership, and former Kenosha Unified School superintendent, Joe Manji. Now here's today's Education Matters moderator.
Hello, I'm Karen Sconzert, and this is Education Matters. It's springtime of an election year, and the Wisconsin State Legislature is busy with many pieces of legislation, including several about K through 12 schools. One proposed piece of legislation reads as follows. Under current law, school districts, independent charter schools, and private schools participating in the parental school choice programs must administer a standardized reading test to certain third grade pupils. Under the bill, a school board, independent charter school operator, or private school participating in the parental school choice building may not promote a third grade pupil enrolled in the school district, including a pupil enrolled in a charter school in the school district, to the fourth grade unless that pupil scores proficient or higher on the test. So the shorthand for this is that it's a flunking policy. And at first hearing, it might sound like a great policy. We don't want kids moving on to fourth grade without being able to read proficiently. So as with many sweeping policies, though, it's really not that simple. And we have a very large scale study of retaining students that was completed nearly 20 years ago in Illinois during a time where there was a similar policy in place. So does it make sense to flunk kids who struggle on a standardized test when they are 8 or 9 years old? What are the benefits to such a policy for kids, schools, and taxpayers? And are there any drawbacks? So for today's guest to discuss this issue is Jenny Nagaoka, who is the deputy director of the UChicago Consortium, where she has conducted research for over 20 years. Her research interests focus on policy and practice in urban education reform, particularly using data to connect research and practice. She is the lead researcher on the To and Through Project, a project that provides educators, policymakers, and families with research data and training on the milestones that matter the most for college success. She is also the lead author of Foundations for Young Adult Success, a developmental framework, which draws on research and practice evidence to build a coherent framework of foundational factors for young adult success. And so I'm really happy to welcome Jenny Nagaoka. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here. It's good to talk to you, Karen.
Yes. So full disclosure, I worked at the UChicago Consortium from 1994 to 2001, and Jenny and I were colleagues briefly for a few of those years. I also interviewed Jenny's colleague, Elaine Allensworth, about a study of the long-term effects of ACT scores and whether they are predictive of college completion. That ACT score interview, like this one, is available to listen to again at WGTD.org on the Education Matters archive page. So welcome again, Jenny. First, please tell us about the policy that Chicago adopted for public school students. When was it put into place and what was the policy?
Sure. So Chicago is one of the first districts or states to really be pushing a retention policy, and they called it ending social promotion. So this is a policy from 25 years ago. So it first went into place fully in 1997. Initially in 1996, they enacted for eighth graders, but the full policy didn't happen until 1 year later. So there are three, what we refer to as the gate grades under this policy. So it impacts third graders, sixth graders, and eighth graders. And at the time in 1997, students in those three grades would take the Iowa Test of Basic Skills in spring. If they didn't pass cutoff scores, they would have to attend a summer program called Summer Bridge. They'd have another opportunity to take the test and achieve scores past the cutoff scores And if they didn't pass those, they would have to repeat the grade. For eighth graders who are going to be turning 15, they would actually end up going to what they called transition centers instead of going back to eighth grade because they were considerably older than their peers. And they also didn't, and they also were not in regular high schools. There was some discretion given to principals around who would be promoted, but largely this was initially a policy that was centered around test scores. And a few years later, they did start to also use other types of criteria like attendance, grades, homework completion, as other sorts of factors that were used at the end of summer before a student would actually be retained. And currently the policy in the Chicago Public Schools is entirely based on grades and then some other types of discretionary matters, but it's centered around grades as opposed to test scores.
And for those of you who are interested, there's a long discussion of test scores and whether they're predictive of college success specifically, but this is kind of a longstanding issue, is whether test scores are very predictive of much of anything. And so, and the argument is that grades are much more predictive in the same way. I think the analogy that Elaine used when we talked about this a few months ago was that if you were trying to choose football players for your team, and you were only using their time on the 100 meter dash and not all the other things that they do in practice on it on multiple days over multiple times, you would probably not have a particularly good football team, because the 100 meter dash is only one thing that would tell you anything about their skills as a football player. It's not telling you about a lot of the other things that go into being a good football player. So that's sort of one way to look at it. So tell us, what was the rationale at the time, 25 years ago, for this policy in Chicago? What was the problem that policymakers thought that they would solve by holding kids back a grade at third, sixth, and eighth grade?
Yeah, so 25 years ago, like the Chicago Public Schools were in a really different place. I mean, there were a lot of concerns about how schools were doing, achievement levels overall. You know, high school graduation rates were below 50%. They're now over 80%, so things have changed considerably. But one of the big things that was coming up is that, like, high school teachers and principals were saying that students were coming to them not prepared to do high school level work. So there was this idea that something had to be done to really improve student achievement. And so part of the thought process is that, you know, let's figure out who the students are that are struggling. And there's this idea that students would be better off if they had another opportunity to see the material, do all these skills, and they would be able to catch up by repeating a grade, and that after repeating the grade, they would then sort of be much better off and be better performing going forward. And so a lot of the idea around retention was this whole idea of a kind of this hard accountability of that, you know, what we really need to do is motivate students and teachers to work harder, to get parents more involved, that, you know, that part of the issue is that students don't care about school, student or teachers are not sufficiently motivated to be doing their jobs well and to really be trying to support their students and learning. And so, you know, I think this kind of centering the idea that the problem is a lack of effort or a lack of motivation or caring on the part of students, teachers, and their parents, you know, I think there's a lot of question. I think there's also some issues around, especially if you're thinking about third grade students, I mean, to what extent are third graders actually able to respond to motivation and know what it means? Do they means to work harder? Do they really have strategies on how to do that? You know, I mean, I think there are some good things. You know, it's important to be paying attention to the students who are struggling the most. And this is part of the idea is that, you know, a lot of time, I think, especially 25 years ago, schools were largely designed for kind of average achieving students. There were some opportunities for high achieving students, but there really wasn't that much attention being paid to the students who were struggling. And this then did shift attention to these students who actually did need to have something being done differently for them. But, you know, I mean, this was a policy that was really, you know, it was in an age of accountability, and this was accountability for students, right? For third graders, for sixth graders, and for eighth graders. You know, I think that's like students were not measuring up based on a couple of attempts at a test, and because they were not doing well enough, they were going to have to repeat a grade. You know, and I think the question that came up then, and I imagine now in Wisconsin, is also around like who actually isn't doing the job that they're supposed to be doing for students. You know, like, how are schools performing? Are schools actually being given the kind of resources they actually need to support students well? This idea that this is strictly a problem of motivation, that everybody inside of schools, students included, just need to work harder, is a rather limited way of thinking about what actually needs to be happening and what needs to change inside of schools.
Right. Yeah, I think that, you know, this seems like an age-old issue. Like, there are some people, I was mentioning to you just before we started recording that, you know, at the beginning of the pandemic, everyone was like, oh, wow, okay, now I sort of see what teachers go through every day because I'm watching it on my kid's screen while we're all here at home. But that quickly shifted. Somehow it became an issue of teachers aren't really working if they're not in their classrooms, even though most of them wanted nothing more than to be in their classrooms. So it's sort of an interesting blame game to play when the questions are probably a lot bigger than that. Yeah. So how does this policy differ from what you know about the Wisconsin policy, which is just the sort of brief bit that we pulled from the bill? And how is it similar?
Yeah, I mean, I think probably one thing to note too is that, you know, like, the policy in Chicago did evolve over time, even in the time period. So there's a lot of tweaks going on. You know, I mean, in Chicago, there were three gate grades. It's third, sixth, and eighth grade. Wisconsin is focused on third grade. So one of the big downsides of what happened in Chicago is that some students ended up being retained multiple times, or even students who were retained in third grade were then, there was a possibility that they would be retained in sixth and eighth grade. And there are even some kids who were retained twice in third grade. So they actually spent 3 years in third grade, which is a lot of time. I think one of the really important differences with how the policy was done in Chicago is that students with disabilities and English language learners were not subject to the policy and having to pass these tests. In Wisconsin, you know, right now, the criteria seems to be really strictly based on test scores. There was a lot more discretion allowed in Chicago. Like, initially, it was sort of kind of very ambiguous about what that meant, but there was discretion at the principal level. There's also some discretion at higher levels too around who would be passed. Later on, the criteria became a little bit clearer about like when students, like when other criteria like grades, attendance, homework performance would actually be subject to it. I think another thing that Chicago actually really got right was implementing support programs. So I mentioned the Summer Bridge program that Chicago had. So it's like the idea is that, you know, things didn't work out for students during the school year, but they would also provide another opportunity for students to be exposed to the material that they apparently struggled with the first time around. And then, very importantly, be given a second opportunity to take the test and then pass. So there was the idea that the school year was not enough, but given something that is more targeted toward the needs of students who hadn't been able to pass the test cutoff scores, they might learn the material better another time, and that they also had another opportunity to pass the test. Chicago, a little bit later, also started with an after-school program that they called Lighthouse. And so students that either seemed to be, that it seemed like, given their previous performance, that they may not be likely to actually pass the cutoff scores on the test, were participating, and also students were retained in it. I think one important similarity between the Chicago policy and what is being proposed in Wisconsin is how little guidance there is being given on kind of the retained year, like what's supposed to be different the second time around. I think if third grade didn't work out for a student the first time, simply having more of it in the exact same way doesn't seem a particularly likely strategy to begin. You know, there's a lot of specific reasons why students may not have done it, but I think actually trying to understand what may need to be different or what additional supports could actually help students if they are retained is like a critical missing piece in both what Chicago did and what seems to be proposed in Wisconsin.
Right. Let me just quickly reintroduce. You are listening to WGTD HD-FM. I'm your host, Karen Sconzert, and this is Education Matters. This discussion of the use of standardized testing policy to make students repeat a year of schooling with researcher Jenny Nagaoka of the University of Chicago Consortium is archived at WGTD.org on the Education Matters page. You are invited to listen again, or you can find our WGTD Education Matters Facebook page and join in a discussion there. I do want to say that I pulled out the one part that's about third grade test scores. There are a few other things in the bill, one of which is to increase the number of teachers that have special reading licenses and are reading specialists. And there's some other things. So it's a little hard to say from the first published bill to the final passed bill, what will end up being in this. But this was the part that sort of grabbed me because I remember doing the research on this. I was, when Jenny was doing this research, this report we're talking about was published 17 years ago, I believe. It was the follow-up to the policy. And before that, a few years earlier, I was participating in a project where we talked to a lot of teachers in the schools about the impacts that these various policies were having on their teaching. And one of the things that happened a lot of times is the teachers ended up spending a lot more time teaching to the test and doing practice test drills and things like that, rather than, for example, doing a lot of reading in their classes. And I remember an eighth grade teacher telling me very specifically about how, and this was a teacher who was great and always had done well and was a sort of beloved figure in her school, said that she started doing a lot of drills and then eventually realized that all of the joy was going out of her classroom and the children weren't learning because it was just, there was nothing exciting about learning if you were practicing tests all the time. So I don't know if you have any thoughts about that and what the effects might be on students maybe who aren't struggling in these classrooms.
Yeah, I mean, that's so part of the study we did surveys of students and teachers. We also did interviews with students mm-hmm. and teachers about their experiences. So we really kind of got a pretty good sense, not just in terms of test scores, what was happening to students, but really what was it like to be in this policy under retention and the Summer Bridge experience as well? You know, and this was particular, I think one of the things important to, like, when I go back like 25, like, what things were like 20, 25 years ago, I mean, this was a really a big deal in Chicago. I mean, it was kind of, especially in lower achieving schools. This was like all consuming. This was really, you know, from both the teacher and the student perspective, this was something that occupied a great deal of their minds and what they were trying to do during school. And so, you know, when we looked at survey results and how teachers were describing what they're doing, I mean, a lot of it is like exactly what you were saying, Karen, about how there was like this the teachers changed what they were teaching to be trying to support students in learning, learning what was needed for the test, not what they thought students actually should be learning in third, sixth, and eighth grade, but what they thought they needed to know in order to pass the test. And the Iowa Test of Basic Skills, which was used for the policy, was a pretty narrow test. It wasn't designed around a curriculum. There's also a lot more time being spent on math and reading because those were the subjects being taught or that were on the test. And so other things like science, social science, art, music, PE were deprioritized during the school day. And then even within those topics, teachers started to focus on what was covered by the test. How they taught was much more oriented toward tests. They also spent a lot of time on test prep in the sense of test-taking skills. So, you know, how do you we'd heard from teachers who were having students practice bubbling in the form so that they would actually cover the whole area and it would get read by the Scantron machine, you know, just understanding guessing strategies, like things that were actually not instructional content, but just how to game the test or how to just do better on the test. And other work actually that was done by Elaine showed that like on the ACT scores, the more time that students are spending on test prep, that's actually detrimental to how they perform on tests. So not only is because they're not actually learning what is supposed to be covered by the test. So this is something that was also really concerning. On the other hand, you know, there, like one of the pieces of the policy was around motivation. And, you know, in interviews that we did with sixth and eighth graders, you know, there were a lot of students who actually did say they started working harder, mm-hmm. and they also felt more supported by teachers, you know, but on the other hand, there were also students who were sort of demotivated by this because they felt like they had no chance to pass the test. It's like, it was this test score barrier looming in front of them that they really didn't have any sense of how, they would be able to pass it. But another thing that came up in the qualitative work was just how important the role of teachers really was in how students thought about the test. Like, was this something that really helped them motivate it? Did teachers actually create an environment where students felt supported and that they were sort of working together to help students pass the test? Because I think one thing too that I think is really important to remember about a policy like this is that it's not just going to be affecting the students who end up being retained, especially in the low achieving schools. This is something that's affecting all of the students and is affecting how teachers are approaching their instruction. So this may seem like a relatively narrow policy that's about super low achieving students, but actually if it also affects the other students who are in those schools and in those classrooms. Mm-hmm. So the implications are a lot broader than I think it may be immediately apparent with this.
It's interesting that the sixth and the eighth graders in some cases were either more motivated or possibly more discouraged. Mm-hmm. Sixth and eighth graders are at a really different stage in their lives and in their sort of feelings of their own agency than I mm-hmm. think third graders are. And it's sort of a paradox though, because by sixth or eighth grade, you know, some of the skill windows are maybe a closed or possibly so narrow that it's hard to catch up. So you sort of do want to go to third grade or earlier to mm-hmm. identify students, but they are not really so much in control of their own motivation at that point. Some of them can be motivated, mm-hmm. but they don't really understand. Just telling them you can't watch TV or you can't play with your iPad unless you do well on this thing is, you know, not necessarily going to work, because that's mm-hmm. it's not just because they're not working, especially if they have some sort of a learning disability around reading or something like that that's not diagnosed. So tell us sort of overall, what were the findings about the policy? Were a lot of students held back? What happened to the ones who were? What happened to the ones who passed and moved on? Did anybody get, you know, retained multiple times, you mentioned?
Yeah, I mean, this is a big policy in Chicago, and it affected, I mean, it, you know, almost all students were affected in different ways. Mm-hmm. But you know, a lot of students were retained in Chicago. So among third graders who were eligible for the policy, so students who were not English learners or students with disabilities, 20% of third graders were retained. And about 10% of sixth graders and eighth graders were retained in the first 3 years of the policy. These numbers did go down in later years, but initially there were a lot of students who were being retained. And in particular, Black students were more likely to be retained. I think the numbers for Latino students were somewhat lower, but a lot more Latino students didn't fall under the policy because they were classified as English learners at the time of the tests. Mm-hmm. You know, and so, you know, overall, you know, we did see on the plus side across the board, test scores, more and more students were actually passing the cutoff scores on the Iowa tests, and test scores did go up. So there was some changes in what was happening on the test scores. But I think the big question that I think people have around the retention policy too is, you know, what happened to the students who were retained? And, you know, one of the ways that one of the critical ways that we approached this question was thinking about, like, what do you actually want for these retained students? Who are you going to compare them to? Are you trying to have these students who've spent 2 years in the same grade and seeing, are they doing as well as like similar classmates? Or are you saying, are they better off not having had to, like, being promoted rather than being retained? So comparing them to kind of the counterfactual of what their performance would have looked like had they not been retained. You know, and we took that approach, and we said, you know, would students be better off, like, would a student who struggled in third, sixth, or eighth grade be better off being retained or being promoted to the next grade, and what happened to their learning gains under those two scenarios, you know? And, you know, what we found is that, you know, for third graders, there really wasn't any change in their learning gains. So they were not made worse off, and they were not made better off, but they did have to go through the same grade twice. And so there's a lot of kind of lifelong consequences to that. And, you know, and also like expenses that accrued to the school district because they are responsible for another year of schooling.
Right. Yeah. So I just want to stop and make this point right now, since you're saying it. If you are holding a student back and having them repeat another grade, that means you're attacking an extra year at whatever the cost of that year is onto the end of their schooling. It's not like they repeat third grade and then they skip fourth grade. They just keep going through. So if they're in school from K through 12, that's 13 years of schooling that we're paying for at whatever the rate is, which is something like $11,000 or $12,000 a year right now in Wisconsin. If they are retained, then that means that you have to do that again. So basically you're talking about $12,000 a year or whatever the cost is by the time they're in 12th grade. That's a lot of money.
It's a lot of money. And it's also like, and the individual differences are also large too, right? Because mm-hmm. you're spending another year in school. So even if you kind of go through high school and go on to college and sort of graduate in a timely fashion, it's like one less year that you are a part of the workforce potentially, right. or doing whatever it is that you would like to be doing with your life, because you're spending most of your time in school. And so there's a lot of, you know, life trajectory implications for this, for these students. And there's also, you know, even if everything goes completely well after that retained year, there's a lot of lifelong differences, but there's also the expenses to school districts, to, you know, taxpayers for having to be responsible for this additional year. And kind of going back to like the findings, like for third grade, you know, they've got this extra year, but there's no negative effects. But for sixth graders, we actually saw that they had lower learning gains during the retained year. So there's actually some negative effects for these students. So not only do they have this extra year of schooling, but they're actually learning less in their retained year than what we would estimate these students would have learned had they been promoted. And I think the other thing to think about too is we didn't look at this for third and sixth graders, but for eighth graders who had been retained, they also were more likely, a little bit more likely to be dropping out of high school. So that's another way that this creates, you know, both, you know, some consequences for the individual students and their families, but it also means that as a whole, we have fewer graduates. There are some other mitigating factors on this, like in Chicago, it also seemed that overall, you know, we saw slightly high overall test scores. We also saw that for students who were not retained, it seemed like they were somewhat less likely to be dropping out of high school, which sort of in some ways balanced it off. But this is also creating some students who are accruing the negative effects of this policy, whereas other students may be benefiting slightly from this, at least strictly in terms of graduation and test scores. I think one other, there are a couple of other kind of probably somewhat less intended consequences of this policy. And this has happened maybe perhaps more likely to happen in Chicago than in Wisconsin because of how we handled students with disabilities. But there were a lot more students who ended up being classified as having disabilities. So about 20% of students who were retained in third grade and sixth graders were identified as having a disability. Now, it's possible that this was, that these were undiagnosed students, and this was, you know, and that it was good that they, it was good that they were finally identified, but this was something that happened later on than it should have been. And so that was, I think, one thing that happened. Another thing too is that we also saw more students being retained prior to third grade. So because teachers in kindergarten, first and second grade knew that this third grade test score, you know, the possibility of retainment was coming up, they actually started retaining more students in the earlier grade. So it's not just something that happens in third grade. This is also impacting how teachers in earlier grades are thinking about their students. And so I think just to kind of reiterate, this is a policy that's not just like, it's not going to affect just third grade. This has like spillover effects over time for a lot of other teachers and across schools too.
Let me quickly do a reintroduction. You are listening to WGTD HDFM. I'm your host, Karen Sconzert, and this is Education Matters. This discussion of the use of standardized testing policy to have students repeat a year of schooling with researcher Jenny Nagaoka of the UChicago Consortium is archived at WGTD.org on the Education Matters page. You are invited to listen again, or you can find our WGTD Education Matters Facebook page and join in a discussion there. You've already raised a whole bunch of things that even I, who was there at the time and have read the reports, kind of forgot about, that the fact that people were retaining kids in kindergarten and first grade. Is there any, does that make any sense? Like, should that be where our focus is, on those early grades? And does retention at early grades help, or is there some other effective way of intervening if students are having difficulty learning to read?
I mean, I think, you know, it's kind of an interesting question, because I think, you know, in some ways, like we have certain milestones, you know, besides test scores that we think students should be hitting, and some students may end up being retained. But I think, you know, one thing that we know about development is that it's not as evenly paced as we think it should be. Students develop at different rates. They learn at different rates. This isn't something that's just this clear linear trajectory that is going to be the same at all times. And so, you know, quite often a student may be struggling and be behind developmentally or even in their learning progress in first grade, but they go through, undergo, you know, a spurt, and suddenly they are at a much more similar place to their classmates. And so I think it's, you know, there may be specific circumstances where it makes sense, but a lot of times, you know, time will allow things to even out. And, you know, what's more important is not to sort of say just repeating a grade again will make a difference, but, you know, to be really thinking about what it is that individual students really need in order to be learning and developing and be successful in school. You know, I think this one other thing about the retention policy is that, you know, it's based on one test score and one sort of idea of what students need to be, like what students need to have learned and what they need to be able to do. And test scores are really narrow. And it's just really important to make sure that students are being seen more holistically and thinking about what they need in order to be successful in school.
Yeah. I mean, it's the 100-meter dash kind of thing.
Yeah,
right. Completely. So it's like, really, is that enough? If you can run really fast, does that make you a great football player? There's actually a whole lot of other skills involved. And does doing well on one test score on one day make you a really good member of society, which is partly what we're trying to do mm-hmm. in schools, not just teach academics, but just to be able to get along with other people and, you know, behave on the playground and be healthy and all kinds of other things. So,
yeah, I mean, because that is like one of the things too that happened. I mean, you sort of talked a little bit about how teachers narrowed what they were teaching, but mm-hmm. it also just meant like the purpose of school for students and teachers narrowed in a lot of ways, right? I mean, it's sort of this one measure became the determinant of whether or not a student thought they were successful or a failure. And it really started to define what, like, why school mattered and mm-hmm. what the purpose of schooling was simply about tests. And we know that really what brings that, what, why students want to learn, why students want to teach, what we actually care about, what young people become in the long term is a lot more than a single test score. I mean, I don't think any of us as adults define ourselves by our SAT scores, or at least I hope not, because there's so much more to life and so much more of what defines what we get out of life, what we're contributing to society than a test score. And we want schools to be developing students in those directions and not be narrowed down to something that is as small as a test score. Like, test scores provide information and they have their place, but they should not be the only way that we define whether or not a student is going to be successful in the long term or what the purpose of schooling actually is.
Mm-hmm. One researcher put it in a way that I repeat all the time to my students who are future teachers, our current model of schooling is based on batch processing students by their date of manufacture. So basically, your birthday determines where you appear in who your peers are. And that's pretty much it. That's the only thing we look at is your birthday. And so to expect everyone that was born in a certain 12-month period to develop in exactly the same way, we know that there are big differences between the kids that are born in September and the ones that are born in June, because that's a big period of time when you're a little kid. So it's sort of an interesting thing that we continue to use that as our benchmark, is when you were born, as opposed to where you are in developmental track. So if you had a member of the Wisconsin legislature here today, talking with us. Maybe they would just Zoom in with us for a few minutes. What advice would you give them on this policy, and what alternatives would you recommend to holding students back in third grade based on test scores?
I mean, you know, one is like, you know, we didn't find any evidence that retaining students helped them at all. There were, you know, some negative effects for, particularly for students who retained in later grades. But I think the idea that like a third grade student is going through third grade twice is going to help them, there's no evidence for that. And they are spending one extra year of their life, and we're paying for one extra year of schooling. So that doesn't seem to be a terribly effective strategy. You know, there may be some motivational benefits for some teachers and some students and some families, but that is not, I think it's a misidentification of the fundamental issue that we're trying to address, you know, helping students do better in school and helping teachers be more effective. You know, what's really going to matter is the kind of investments that we're making in schools. Are we helping teachers be able to, you know, to have the kinds of have training, to have the kind of time and resources that they really are able to be effective in helping students learn and develop in schools? I think maybe one thing that Chicago did do well was actually the idea that, you know, some students do need extra supports. You know, and I didn't talk that much about the Summer Bridge program, but that was, I think, largely viewed as successful by students and teachers. I think one of the things that surprised me most about the study was the fact that the sixth and eighth grade students, for the most part, actually liked the experience of summer school and liked it better than their regular school. They found it more engaging. It was a lot more targeted for them. And teachers actually had the time to go at the pace and to sort of understand what students actually needed in order to be successful. So I think that sort of points to, there were some good things about summer school in Chicago, but what can we learn from that sort of experience and apply it to the regular school year so that we don't have to be retaining students, that students are able to be successful. A big piece of the retention policy is that it's accountability where the burden largely falls on students. And especially when you think about a policy where the consequences of not doing well are really falling on 8 and 9 year olds. I mean, I think that's really hard to think about, mm-hmm. you know, that, you know, when the adults are not providing students the kind of learning environment and supports that they need in order to do well, we're placing all the consequences on children as opposed to really thinking about, you know, how can we do a better job of serving students?
Great. So we're out of time, as often happens. How can listeners access this 2004 report or any of your current research?
Yeah, so all of our research is available on our website, which is consortium, consortium.uchicago.edu. So it's consortium.uchicago.edu. And they're all available free PDFs.
I'll put that in the show notes and also on the Facebook page if anybody wants to access this specific report or the research that's done in general. Well, thank you, Jenny. You're listening to WGTD HDFM. This is Education Matters, and this discussion of the use of standardized testing policy to have students repeat a year of schooling with researcher Jenny Nagaoka of the UChicago Consortium is archived at WGTD.org on the Education Matters page. You're invited to listen again, or you can find our GTD Education Matters Facebook page and join in a discussion there. Thank you so much, Jenny, for joining us.
Thank you. It's been great talking with you.
You've been listening to Education Matters, heard each Saturday morning at 10:30 on WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. Archived programs are available on our website, wgtd.org. You're invited to continue the discussion on the Education Matters Facebook